paramedic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Fourth and final hour. Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good Monday to this point. Always enjoy our conversations with our next guest, Tom Hart. SEC Network, XFL, ESPN. He does it all, and he's on the line with us. Tom, how you doing?
What's up, gang? I'm great. Thanks for having me.
I got to be honest. Last week, we were absolutely cackling at what happened. I happened to be watching the game live, but when you and Andy Kennedy were doing that game, I mean, your response was just fantastic. I mean, you lost it, and that was natural. That was very organic because I would have done the same thing in that moment.
Who mixes up Ron Burgundy and Ron Jones? How does that happen?
Andy Kennedy, apparently.
And number two. Yeah, Andy Kennedy does. That's right. We had such a laugh over the whole thing. We're out for pops afterwards. We're kind of walking through it, debriefing. And AK looks at me and he goes, "You think any of his friends texted Ron Jeremy and said, hey, man, you're trending?" Like, what's 67-year-old Ron Jeremy doing on a Tuesday afternoon on the West Coast? You know, just he's just chilling in his house, and all of a sudden his phone starts blowing up. Some former SEC basketball coach mentioned you during a game. That gave us a really big laugh.
What is it like, Tom? Because you have to finish out your job. You guys have a game to complete, and yet you know around you right now if something is going viral or, like you said, trending, and it's blowing up like on social media. What is that like? Because you can't really consume it with the rest of us, even though you just lived it out. But there's this whole other branch of stuff going on behind the scenes that you have to wait till later that night to see. What's that like going through that?
Well, you know, even if it wasn't trending, we would have laughed about it. Because what happens once you go down that road, and I'm sure this has happened to you guys at some point, is in every comment that you make that could be a double entendre that you didn't even intend, like, we're looking at each other, and Twitter is reacting too. Oh my God, they just said take it hard to the hole. These guys are killing me. Well, no, we didn't mean anything besides basketball. They've got to take it hard to the hole. But because everybody's mind is already in the gutter, then it's just this snowball effect. And there were numerous comments that both of us made throughout the remainder of the game where we'd shoot a glance at the other guy, like, did you do that on purpose? Are we talking about Mason Jones' spurtability because of basketball or some other reason? What are we talking about here?
Oh, man, that's funny. I know we're going to get into the XFL product that was on display this weekend in just a moment, but you've had a chance to look at the league, the SEC, as a whole, as we sit here in February, approaching the midway point of February, so it's getting deeper into the season. What are you seeing? I mean, that was quite a win for Kentucky and Knoxville. They're doing what they always do. They're getting better with every game, every month. The league is obviously down from last year, but what have you seen to this point?
Well, the league may be down as a whole from a national perspective right now, but I think there are, you know, I like to think of it in terms of teams that can make it to the Final Four versus winning a national championship. I think a lot of times a national championship is luck at the end of this long tournament. Not that teams aren't deserving. I think you know what I'm saying. Like, great teams reach the Final Four, and then who gets bounces, who gets whistles, that kind of thing, with a small sample size of two games to go. But if you look at it from that perspective, I think the SEC still has – I mean, they've got as many Final Four contenders as the Big Ten, and the Big Ten is widely thought to be the best conference right now because they have so much depth and certainly more – national championship contenders than the ACC has right now, which I think is or similar numbers. Let's just say similar, not necessarily more. But Kentucky, Auburn, LSU, and Mississippi State, to me, have the talent to make it to the Final Four. I think Mississippi State has all the pieces, and they're better than their overall record indicates to this point. I like LSU because they have guys, maybe the last two games notwithstanding, they have dudes that make plays at the end of the game, at the end of the clock. They play with fire a little bit because I think they play to the level of their competition, and obviously that's both good and bad. But when you do that, you're in a lot of close games, and they could go either way, and they win more of those than they lose. Auburn's reinvented themselves. You know, they're not as reliant on the three, obviously, as they were last year, and they made the most threes in SEC history and the second most in NCAA history. But they are now getting players, whether it's Samir Dowdy or Javon McCormick. Bruce Pearl had to wait for those guys to come around and be similar to the LSU players. Like, I want the ball in my hands at the end of the clock. I can go get a bucket. Like, to be the reliable, get-the-bucket dude at the end of the clock. And Kentucky, you summarize them well. I mean, this is the time of year. Every year they get better. The big difference is they've never had a junior lead them in scoring under John Calipari. And so what Nick Richards has done in terms of elevating his game year to year and then break it down further month to month has been really impressive. And I've said this before, I think the coaching staff deserves kudos for allowing him to grow. I mean, that is a very demanding coaching staff, starting with Cal, and it's not uncommon for somebody to get in the doghouse and not find their way out because they don't take advantage of the small opportunities that they have. They didn't do that with Nick Richards. They didn't bury him. They believed in his ability. They just had to wait for him to come around and show the motor that he needed to be an elite player, and he's there.
Interesting that you brought up Mississippi State in that grouping. Vanderbilt lost in Starkville on Saturday, but that you've gotten a better look at them. How about Arkansas? You didn't bring them up. What do you make of them?
Well, they're really hurt by injuries right now. Mm-hmm. They just don't have the depth that they need. I don't know how soon Isaiah Joe is going to be back. He had a knee procedure last Monday or Tuesday. I forget which date it was. He's an NBA prospect. He spreads the floor with his shooting ability. He's on the Jerry West Award watch list as one of the finalists for one of the best shooting guards in the country. Excuse me. Without him, they really become two-dimensional. And Mason Jones is fantastic, and he's my short list for SEC Player of the Year. He had three straight 30-plus point games. He had 40 in the game the other night. He gets to the foul line. He can pass over guys. He's a little bit out of position as a point forward almost, but he just doesn't have enough around him, and they are an inverted offensive team. Jimmy Witt at 6'3", a lot of times plays the post, and that can be good at times, but you get exposed, when you play against bigger teams. And so they've gotten to be very one-dimensional without Isaiah Joe. That's a tough schedule now going forward with them. Tennessee, Mississippi State, Florida. They just lost to Missouri, have them again. They still have LSU and Georgia down the road. I think they're an NCAA tournament team before Joe got hurt. I just don't know if they can find enough wins to stay a tournament team, especially considering they're coming off back-to-back losses in overtime.
We're talking to Tom Hart of ESPN, the SEC Network. You can see him football, basketball, and also the XFL, which made its debut over the weekend, and I was watching pretty much all weekend long, and I really like the product. I like the presentation that you guys had. I know you had a fun game between St. Louis and Dallas, but what was it that really stood out to you with the first weekend?
Well, a handful of things. I think the rules changes take some getting used to. They're certainly jarring when you see them for the first time. You know, when you see a team come out for a kickoff and they're lined up differently than they ever have. But that's by design, and it's by design to get better, not just better returns, but more returns. Last year in the NFL, there were over 2,600 kickoffs, and they had almost 1,600 touchbacks. So 61% chance of nothing happening on a kickoff in the NFL. That was turned upside down in the XFL this weekend. There were touchbacks only 6 of the 35 kickoffs in week one. And one of those came at the beginning of our game. They actually moved the kickoff line in the game. And this is Oliver Luck has the right to do this. If there is a lot of wind, they want as many returns as they could get. So if there's a lot of wind in the game, They can move the kickoff line by 5 yards. They can make that determination inside 90 minutes before game time. They don't want touchbacks. They don't want kicks going out of bounds, major penalties on major touchbacks for those. So they want returns, and they found a way, they think, to make it safer by moving the coverage team all the way up to the 30-yard line. The 35, and the return team at the 30. So that's fascinating. We had Troy Aikman at our game, and he was talking with Pat McAfee on the sideline, and he had been watching. And, you know, here's not only a Hall of Famer, but a guy who's called Super Bowls for Fox. And obviously, you know, we all see him every Sunday. And he was intrigued by the rules and can anticipate the NFL maybe adopting some of these and some of the access. And a lot of the positive feedback I get and have gotten is from fans that love eavesdropping on the instant replay booth and the communication between the replay coordinator and the white hat on the field. And I think it does two things. It helps us understand how the decision-making process is communicated, how they make decisions, quite frankly, just succinctly. And more importantly, listen, we all live in the SEC. We know we're passionate about the NFL. Every time there's a flag against your team, we all think there's this huge conspiracy. It's not the case. And when you're able, when the officials are transparent with fans and viewers, then you understand, oh, wait, these are just guys doing their jobs. They're not out to screw me or screw my team.
I know that you do a lot of prep, obviously, when you're getting ready for a game. Play-by-play is not easy. How much did it change for you knowing that there were going to be so many elements that were mic'd up, like you mentioned, the replay booth and the players on the field?
Well, it made it a lot easier in some ways, because that's a lot less time that we have or need to story tell or set up certain players or coaches, because they're doing it themselves. The challenge was, and both staffs were great with us. I think you see, if you don't know Hal Mumme, watching him and hearing him, Mike, you get a sense of his personality. No secrets with that guy. You know, I mean, he's sipping bourbon in the hot tub with the players, dreaming up new plays. He comes on the field for, you know, walkthrough with, you know, flip-flops on and a towel around his neck. He's a pretty chill guy. If you want to learn about the air raid, just call him up. He'll teach you about it. But learning the language that they use, and everybody's different, so we can identify their play calls and help the audience know what's coming, or at least a segment of what might be coming. And just a quick example, Chuck Long, the offensive coordinator at St. Louis, said, yeah, anytime you hear Iowa, that's our call for inside zone. Okay, now we know where the ball's going, you know, and we can still do a better job of teaching viewers what those play calls mean. And you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that don't know what inside zone means. So we can go deeper in that regard. But the prep takes on a different level because it becomes a lot more technical. So then we can translate that for the audience.
Is McAfee all right? I thought he was going to lose his mind in your all's game.
Well.
Yeah, hey, don't ever cause a touchback in front of a punter when it should be.
Man, that was some high drama. I like that. I was wondering if you guys at some point this season are going to have him jump off a houseboat. You think you can work that in?
yeah, but we just need to bring a houseboat to a game. I'm sure he'd be willing to do it.
I bet he would.
There's no doubt about it.
Tom, appreciate the visit as always. Thanks for doing this, and enjoy your work.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, that is Tom Hart, SEC Network, ESPN, and now part of the XFL broadcast team. Remember, XFL being aired on ABC, ESPN, and the Fox channels. That is probably one of the biggest differences you'll notice with these startup leagues, is you don't have to really search high and low to find their games. It's a little bit more prevalent, those channels. It's not on, you know, true crime TV. MTV,
the NFL Network, CBS Sports Network. I mean, it was all over the place with the AAF.
It's not on the Travel Channel, which I watch, but they do a lot of ghost programming on the Travel Channel. All right, we'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Elijah Campbell informing us during the break, because I said it's not on the XFL's not on the Travel Channel, which is full of a lot of ghost programming, which I watch. I've readily admitted that on the show. But Elijah informs us during the break that he believes his home, that him and a lot of his friends and his brother rent a big home in Murfreesboro, he believes that it's haunted. And there's enough proof that they all have to go down that road, that it's haunted.
Plenty of it. I wouldn't even say I believe it's haunted. I think I know for a fact. Stuff happens when I'm in there by myself all the time, specifically my room upstairs is haunted. The Xbox will turn itself on and off all the time. Door opens and closes by itself a lot. My roommates haven't been experiencing it much outside of, like, obviously the upstairs area until...
Which is where you are.
Exactly. And me and my younger brother live upstairs. And my brother doesn't like sleeping upstairs. He crashes on the couch. I've never seen a human being.
Do you think it's because of what you were telling us?
Maybe. It's a good
possibility.
Because
you said he doesn't really want to, he doesn't really talk about it. He doesn't mm-hmm. believe. You're open to say, hey, there's a lot of weird stuff that goes on here.
Oh, very much so.
And I know something's going on.
Oh, yeah. And you know, like that sense that you get if you're sitting in a room
by
yourself.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
No, I don't, because I don't want to sense it. I know what you're talking about, because they talk about it on the shows all the time where they're in a place and mm-hmm. they just feel like somebody's watching them, or somebody's right next to them, or somebody's in the room with them. No, I don't.
It's very
know
real.
That feeling, and I don't want to experience that. I just like to watch it. I don't want to live it.
Oh,
I just
want
to watch it.
And the crazy thing is what I was telling you guys, like, I've always known, like, I live in my room. I am there a lot. So I noticed the door closing and opening, my Xbox turning itself, whatever this thing is, it is obsessed with my Xbox. It loves turning it on, loves turning it off.
Well, and it's not really obsessed with your Xbox. It's obsessed with probably getting your attention. It wants to get your attention.
Quite possibly. But I really haven't shared this as much with my roommates, because a lot of them don't believe in this kind of stuff. One of my roommates really doesn't until the other day when I was getting ready to come in here to produce this great program. So I'm here in the station, and I get a text that said, bro, I thought you were upstairs getting ready the whole time. I was downstairs cooking breakfast. Lucas is asleep on the couch, so I figured it was you. Like, I heard light switches being hit and doors being open and shut multiple times, and I heard footsteps coming down the stairs,
and you
thinking
were not
it was
home.
You. And I said, holy blank, you're kidding. He goes, swear to God, dude, no. I thought it was you until I went out of the driveway and just saw mine and Lucas's car and realized you were gone for work.
Bro, I would be out of that place so fast. Now, they sound like they're friendly ghosts and that you don't have any craziness.
It hasn't beaten me up yet.
Yeah.
Knock on wood.
So you haven't been touched or grabbed or scratched or anything?
Mm-mm. Just, it likes to open and close doors. Yeah. It just wants me to know it's there.
I'd still be like, nope, I'm out.
I'm not really cool with that. But you just say you live where?
I live on Stones River Battlefield, which was a very prominent Civil War battlefield, or the Battle of Murfreesboro, I think is what it's actually called.
Yeah.
And so the Trail of Tears goes through there as well. The original Trail of Tears runs through that battlefield as well.
You got a lot going for you.
May have some dead soldiers walking around your house.
Quite possibly. And it hangs out in my room with me. I haven't given it a name yet, so I'm open to options.
Do you ever talk out loud?
Oh, all the time.
Like, to it?
Not to it,
like,
but
hey,
I'm one of those people.
Who's in here?
I'm one of those. I should probably try it.
Show yourself.
But I'm one of those people that, like, if I'm watching a basketball game, I'll talk to the TV. I'll be like, oh, what are you doing? Or, like, you know, something like that. So
you should try this. Hey, if you're in here with me, right, turn the TV off and just see what happens.
Ooh.
And if it turns it off, just be prepared to be freaked out.
Oh, sometimes it'll freak me out
would
already.
Would you be freaked out, or would you be like, okay, this is kind of cool? Like, you could get on Ghost Stories. You could get on a TV show.
I easily could. But what's really cool is, like, I've almost gotten used to it, which is the crazy thing. Like, I'll be sitting in my room, like, on my desk. I've got a pretty large room. So I got a desk in there, my bed's in there. I'll be doing some work on my desk. Especially, like, when I was in school, that's where I do my homework. And Xbox would just turn itself off. I hear the little doo-doo-doo. My Xbox is turning on. I'm not pressing anything. I'm not turning it on through my controller. Just turn itself off.
Have you experienced lights going off?
Not lights, but the door, definitely. The door will definitely open at random times. And it used to freak me out at first, but after, like, the 20th time, you're just like, I guess it's got to go to the bathroom or something. I don't know what it's doing.
Yeah, but you live in an older house, so maybe there's an explanation for that, though.
Yeah, a ghost opened it.
No.
That's the explanation.
No, I mean,
It's maybe relatively old. I mean, it was built in the 80s, late 80s. It's not like 20s old.
But it's built but on, it's on the product.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just got a little bit of a shady location.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it might be a reason to why our rent isn't as high as I thought it would be when we moved in. That might explain some of that.
You didn't bother to do a background check on the house, did you?
Oh, we saw the price and we wanted to move in immediately. Yeah. Five dudes in college, yeah.
This reminds me of that, I think it was a Geico commercial that came out around Halloween where the guy's looking to buy a house and he goes up in the attic and there's like all these creepy dolls and things and he just goes, nope. that's probably your reaction.
Oh,
nope.
That's definitely my reaction. I'm out.
I've lived here almost 2 years and I have not checked the attic yet, so maybe it might be time to
see what's hanging out there.
Oh, yeah. And I have never checked it.
Do you hear stuff up there?
I do not.
You're going to get locked in the attic.
The only way to get into the attic is through my room.
Oh, we've hit a breakthrough here.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's why.
Maybe I should check it.
Maybe that's why there's activity in your room.
It might be. Might have to take a Twitter poll. Should Elijah go upstairs and check his attic for the first time
since
he's moved
in? Would you Periscope this from the 102.5 of the game account?
100%.
Okay, we need to make this happen.
That would be fun.
This is an adventure.
You need to do that. You need to let us know.
Especially if something happened.
Or
let us know
something.
When you're going to do it so we can watch and we'll retweet it from our accounts.
Oh, yeah.
We need to make this happen.
This could be a good internet event, a live internet event.
Yeah.
The problem is, usually if you watch these shows, the activity is a lot of times in the middle of the night.
Exactly.
Like past midnight.
Always.
Like 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning seem to be the prime time.
Oh, yeah. But for this, whatever it is that's hanging out in my room, active a lot. Hmm. Pretty active fella or lady.
I mean, I guess you don't really have to sleep when you're a ghost.
Yeah, I guess not. I guess you've been doing the whole sleeping thing for a while. This is just extra activity.
Get up and walk around.
I saw where the Oscars, their ratings not good last night.
Yeah, I didn't even really pay attention.
Reached a new low. 23.6 million viewers. This is on, remember, ABC. Just to put things in perspective, since we're a sports show, the college football national championship game had over 25 million viewers, and that was on ESPN, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was an LSU Clemson on ESPN?
Yep.
Yeah, and all the ESPN properties. It had 25 million viewers. The Oscars on ABC had 23.6.
Huh. That's quite a turn. I mean, that shows you one, I guess people weren't interested in the Oscars like they had been in the past, but two, just the reach ESPN has now. I mean, people are finding it. You know, that was a concern when they started shifting most of their sports to ESPN and not ABC. That was a concern. But there you go.
It's also maybe more of, wow, how little people felt about the Oscars last night. ABC, yeah. Wow. That's on Sunday night. That's the best television night. By the way, the college football game was on Monday night. Yikes. Not good for them. All right, we'll come back, talk a little bit more about this Predators team. In fact, we'll check in with Willie in Vancouver in lieu of tonight's game. There was no morning skate, but they did practice yesterday. So we'll talk a little bit about maybe some changes that could be in store as they wrap up this four-game road trip tonight against the Canucks. We do that on the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game. This Sunday, NHL and NBC are hosting Hockey Day in America to celebrate Hockey is for Everyone. Predators and the Blues will be getting ready to suit up and drop the puck at Bridgestone Arena. That'll be a Sunday at 5 p.m. contest. And 102.5 The Game, that's us, is joining the celebration and is giving away autographed jerseys, Team USA jersey. You can enter to win the jersey. Post a picture of American pride to Twitter and tag 102.5 The Game using the hashtag USA Jersey winner will be announced Sunday during the Nashville Predators pregame show. So it's going to be a fun day. NBC is going to do a triple header, and the Predators will wrap up the triple header. I think the first game starts at 11 or 11:30. I think 11:30 on NBC, and it'll wrap up in Nashville with the Preds hosting the Blues. Remember, the Predators will be in St. Louis on Saturday afternoon to take on the Blues. That's going to be a 2 o'clock start, and then they'll be back here on Sunday, same two teams at 5 o'clock. But tonight it's in Vancouver to wrap up this four-game road trip against the Canucks. Predators have an opportunity to end on a high note, collect 2 points. That means you get 6 of 8, and this is deemed a success. Don't get any points, 2 up, 2 down. It's kind of a lot of what we've been seeing for a lot of the season. Not horrible, not great, but that's not what you're looking to do when you're trying to crawl into the playoff picture. Willie is up in Vancouver. He'll be on the call in the television booth with Chris Mason tonight. 9 o'clock start, pregame here on radio at 8 o'clock. I'll have all the coverage on 102.5 The Game. Willie, what's up?
Hey, guys.
You sound out of breath. Are you on the elliptical?
Well, I was trying to get into an area of the building where I would not be hit with a lot of noise issues.
Okay.
So I think I've hit a good spot here.
You have. It's a success. It's a success. Good. So there's no morning skate for the Preds, but they did practice yesterday. Anything stand out yesterday?
Well, it looks like Ryan Ellis is continuing to take those small steps forward, but he will not be in the lineup tonight. John Hines confirmed that this morning. So the additions to the lineup, though, will be Callie Yarncroke and Austin Watson. They will go back in there on that fourth line, and they will play with Colton Sisson. So a more veteran fourth line, if you will, tonight. That will be the new look. Everything else the same.
That's a good-looking fourth line for sure. What was your takeaway from Saturday night's hockey night in Canada, Preds in Edmonton?
Well, I think they, as they look back on it, they feel like they played pretty well. They played a game that if you play that 10 times, you're going to win your share of games. Leon Draisaitl made a couple of big plays late in the game. I think, quite honestly, there were some very questionable calls that all went against Nashville. You know, you're going to have some calls go against you, but it seemed like you could probably circle 4 or 5 different calls that were all sort of borderline, and all of them went to one team. So that was tough to overcome, and you can't make excuses, and you got to keep playing, and you have to figure out a way to get the game to overtime. But that, I thought that was unfortunate, and that did play a role in the game.
Jared Tenorti has been not only in the lineup here of late, he is logging significant minutes. Now, for Tenorti to be in the lineup, that means someone that they've been used to or accustomed to over the years in either Matt Irwin or Yannick Weber, they're out of the lineup. What are you seeing out of Jared Tenorti that obviously the coaches like, that because they keep inserting him in the lineup, and as I said, he's playing significant minutes too?
Well, I think he, number one, maybe more than any other defenseman on the team, benefits from the style of defense that they're playing under John Hines. The switch from man-to-man to zone coverage really helps him, because he's not a guy that's going to chase forwards all around the defensive zone. He's a guy that is more of a stationary player in a zone, can use his size, his range, and his physicality. So I think he has benefited greatly, and I think he's getting more and more comfortable out there the more he plays and the more he sees the game at the NHL level. So I think he's been a great find. I think there's one silver lining of what has come out of over a month now without one of your best players in Ryan Ellis. It's the emergence of Tenorti. And so I think Tenorti is going to be there to stay even when Ellis comes back. That would be my prediction.
So a lot of people are making of UC Saros now making 3 consecutive starts. I said this morning on our morning show that John Hines has been very consistent since he took over. He has preached to his team and publicly to the media that guys will earn their playing time. If you're playing well, you'll be in the lineup, and you'll play significant minutes. If you don't, you'll either not be in the lineup or you'll be moved down and your minutes will be lessened. Is this here recently them riding the hot hand in UC Saros?
Yes. Pekka Rinne will start tonight against Vancouver. And I think the decision on who to play on Saturday was a tough decision. And for the first time in really a while, you know, we've talked about, and we've been pretty open about the fact that neither Pecorine nor UC Saros has had a great season to this point, right? Their numbers are steadily coming up, though. And I think for the first time in a while, they had a choice of two guys that had been playing well, right? A lot of times, to be honest, they're coming back with a game, which guy do we go with? Because the other one has maybe not had a great game. Even if they didn't have a bad game, maybe they didn't have a great game. But Pecorine's last outing against Vegas, he was outstanding. Even though the team was terrible in front of him, he made a season high in saves. He kept them in the game. And then UC Saros came back with, you know, two lights out performances in the first two wins of the road trip. So I just think they chose to go with the hot hand. And I thought Saros played well against Edmonton. He was victimized by a bad bounce on that power play at the end of the second period. And then, you know, the 4-on-3 goal hurt him. If there was one goal that maybe he had a chance at, it was Dreisaitl's second goal. But I think, you know, when you're looking at that, you come out of there saying that was a pretty good game.
Well, and I think the thing that really stands out to me with both goaltenders is as you mentioned, UC is now above the 900% save percentage mark, and Pecorine knocking on the door with an 898. And that, to me, this time of year is quite the feat if they can get both of those guys back above that .900 mark.
Well, I think to me that's the baseline. You've got to get over 90, and hopefully, you know, you get it more up towards, you know, 907, 908, 910, because that's more like it for them. I mean, these guys, if you look at their career, they're more, you know, between 915 and 920 almost every year. And it is getting tougher to have that type of save percentage because the game has opened up some. There is more scoring in the game. But, you know, if both of those guys could get close to 910, I think that's going to mean that they are turning in quality starts each night. And there's still a bunch of back-to-backs left for this team. There's a lot of games left, so they're both going to play a lot. I don't think this is going to emerge into, you know, one guy, quote, winning the job over the other. It's going to be a balancing act. I think Saros is going to play more than he has in past years if he keeps playing well, and that could be good for Pecorine because he'll be rested and playing well. The adjustment is definitely for Rene because he's not used to not getting the nod every single time that the question comes up. But you know, he is 37, and Saros has played well enough in these last few games to warrant more playing time.
How much I know we use this road trip as kind of a gauge of what the rest of the season is going to look like, what the trade deadline could look like for David Poile, and he'll actually join us at Bridgestone Arena on Thursday instead of his normal Tuesday spot, so we'll be able to ask him this question. But he has been up front and saying he doesn't know what he's going to do at the deadline. How much do you think his decision hinges on tonight alone? Because it's the difference in basically winning the road trip and going 500.
I wouldn't put it all on tonight. I think what has happened, if you take a look, you know, every game is gigantic. I mean, you go into almost every game now saying this is the biggest game of the year for one reason or another. I mean, Saturday, you're looking to get to that third win in a row, which has been elusive for such a long time. Now it's like you got to win this game so you can go 3-1 instead of 2-2 on a road trip. But the reality is every game is giant. And I don't know that his thinking is going to change much after this game, whether they win or lose, or lose in a shootout, something like that. To me, it's the moves that they will make. I have a hard time thinking that they're going to be out of the race by the time that the trade deadline rolls around. I have a hard time thinking that. I also have a hard time thinking that they're going to be clearly in the playoffs by the time February 25th goes around. So the most likely scenario is they'll be right where they are right now, battling with other teams for those last few spots. There's so many teams right there within 2 or 3 points of one another. I think that's where they're going to be at. So he's just going to have to decide, is there a move out there that helps them, that doesn't kill them down the road? I don't think he's going to be, you know, throwing in the all-in words, but I think there could be a hockey move or two that might help them a little bit. But we'll see. The one thing that has emerged, guys, to me is Mikhail Granlund is playing so well, mm-hmm. I cannot imagine they would think about trading him at this point. He has become one of the most valuable players the last few weeks, certainly under John Hines.
Yeah, and I mean, I look at other players, too, that have been mentioned. Craig Smith is one of them. I mean, he's been consistent all year, even though his goals, you know, he's not scoring the goals like he has in years past. He's still on pace to probably get to the 20-goal mark, give or take a few. But he's played well, especially with that line. Nick Bonino, another one. So you're kind of in a tough situation of, do you want to part with some of these guys to get assets to build for the future, or do you want to stay in the now and see what happens?
To me, the scenario of standing pat is very realistic. I don't know that they will, but if they did absolutely nothing, I don't think that that would be the worst move in the world. They have depth at forward for sure. I think in a perfect world, could they add another defenseman, a veteran defenseman? I still think so, although Tenorti is giving you some really good reasons to think that he is going to be a piece that they keep for a good while now. He seems to be a good fit, and he gives them the size and physicality that the lineup has not had a lot of, really. You know, we haven't even seen him drop the gloves much, but he's capable of doing that. So that's something he brings to the table. But, you know, if you're looking at making a playoff run, a veteran defenseman that has been through the battles, that might be an upgrade, to me that would be good. But what's the price for that? That's the question.
Did you happen to ski on Grouse Mountain or no?
I did not. I did run through Stanley Park yesterday. And, yes, it is named after the same Stanley as the Stanley Cup, Lord Stanley, if you will. So, you know, Vancouver is about as scenic a city as that there is. And so it's great to get outside and just check it out. It's a fantastic place.
And we should pass along to the Predators catch a nice break. Brock Besser was hurt in their last game, and he is not going to be in the lineup tonight. That is huge.
Yeah, he got tangled up with a Flames player, and so they have said he will miss at least the next two games. And he is a heck of a player. And Elias Pettersson had a really interesting game against the Flames. It got very spicy. They took some physicality tactics to him. He got very frustrated, and he did not have the kind of game that he was looking for. So I think he'll come back strong tonight. This will be interesting. You know, everything that could go wrong has gone wrong in the two games between the Predators and the Canucks. Remember, they were both in November. It was when the Predators couldn't do anything right. They lost, what, 8 out of 9 during that stretch, and they gave up the 8 power play goals, and it just seemed like all they had to do was throw the puck to the net and went in.
Yeah.
So we'll see if this game looks any different tonight, because I would have to think this is in the back of the minds of the Predators to show everybody and show the Canucks that they're a different team now. They're a better team now.
No doubt about it. Enjoy it. Appreciate it as always. And I know you guys will fly back tomorrow, so we will see you on Wednesday.
All right. Sounds great, guys.
All right. Willie Donick in Vancouver telling us Austin Watson, Kelly Yarncroke. Kelly Yarncroke's missed the last 5 games due to an illness. Austin Watson has been a healthy scratch. They will both be back in the lineup. Colton Sissons will center that fourth line with one of those guys on either side. Also, Pekka-Rinne, he has said, back in lineup tonight after UC Saros just got 3 consecutive starts. We'll come back and wrap up Monday's show next. As we said earlier on This Is What I Know, if you missed Duke and North Carolina on Saturday, you missed a good one.
It's a fun game.
There was actually some really good basketball games this weekend. LSU-Auburn was crazy.
Yep.
It was a good game. Unfortunately, Vanderbilt was unable to keep their winning streak of 1 game intact and rolling. But they went down to Mississippi State, fought hard, but
that's a good club.
I got to be honest. I was a little surprised. Tom Hart was pretty high on the Bulldogs. High on Ben Hallen and Mississippi State. Look, it's unfair for me to talk about that. It's not like I've watched much of their games. Tom Hart has seen more than me. But
sure.
What I have seen, I can't say that I'm been exactly. And he didn't say he's blown away by them. He put them in the same grouping with LSU and Auburn and Kentucky, which that's what surprised me.
Which, I mean, you look at the SEC as a whole, it's really hard to, you know, say, okay, it's Auburn's year or it's Kentucky, or, I mean, you just can't pinpoint it right now. So I understand that, you know, especially from somebody that has seen them as much as he has and been around the league, that, okay, you can give him some praise. But you know, this is the time of year now where it really starts to count. You have that final push to March before you get into the conference tournaments. And Mississippi State, they got a good club from what it appears. But as you have brought up and we've seen year after year, Kentucky always seems to flip a switch and go to another level at this time of year. So I think there's a lot of basketball left to be played for some of these teams. A team like Tennessee, they got to get some big wins. I mean, it's not just a comeback win against Alabama, but they got to get some signature wins to be in consideration for the big dance, and I just don't know where they're going to find them.
They're pretty far away right now.
It's just amazing the drop-off. Because I think people knew they weren't going to be as good as they were last year, but did you expect this big of a drop-off?
No, probably not this big, but I mean, everybody could see that they were not going to be the same. The question is, how much?
Yeah.
And so, for a league that we're saying, and a product as a whole that's down, it shouldn't have, you know, you would think it maybe doesn't affect, if the conference got stronger and was more loaded than last year, then that would be one thing, or college basketball was loaded, but when you look around, it's like, they got a lot of work to do. Is it impossible? No, but I mean they're pretty far away from. They're pretty far on the outside looking in right now,
right,
to get in. They're gonna have to beef up that resume big time if they're gonna.
And that's what I mean. That's when I say a signature win, and it's more than just being impressive in the tournament. I mean they got to get some signature wins.
Like, you can't sweep Vanderbilt and say, hey, man,
yeah, look at us. Yeah. No, you got to beat a team like Kentucky or Mississippi State or Auburn or LSU. You got to do that. And if you can do that, then that's going to help your case. And then you also have to have a strong SEC tournament. But it looks like it may not be in the cards for them this year. But the SEC, just like all of college basketball, is interesting. I mean, it's last year was so good, was so entertaining. There's not a team that really stands out to you as, okay, they're going to run away with it, which in some ways is a good thing. You like competition. You know, we love games like we saw on Saturday between Carolina and Duke. I mean, that's entertaining. But, you know, Duke is supposed to be one of the teams to beat. I don't know if they really are.
Well, yeah, but they're not great. Once I said, they're not great. Nobody's great, but – you know, you also have to kind of throw that rivalry out. I mean, that
sure.
When you get Duke and North Carolina, we've seen
it's the, like the
we've
Iron
seen
Bowl.
The
Anything
lesser team stand up and win a game in that series. I mean, that's just you throw everything out truly when those two get together. By the way, how about the week Belmont had? Casey Alexander and the Bruins,
yeah,
beat Murray State.
Yep.
You followed up with a win over Austin Peay.
Pretty good,
not bad.
Casey Alexander will join us Wednesday at 10:15.
Not a bad week.
He'll be doing something special over there at the Curb Event Center. So we'll be talking to him. Yeah. Got a thing. He's going to come on.
It's a tease, ladies and gentlemen. And TSU, after their big win, came close to following up, but they fell in their game.
Yeah. Well, we talked to Brian Penny Collins on Friday. Knew he had a tough test. Look, the OVC is a fun league. If you haven't watched, if you haven't paid attention, do so, because there are so many teams around this area that participate. The OVC is a fun league.
It would have been hard. Look, that would have been a heck of a win, but it would have been hard to imagine Murray falling twice.
Yeah,
back-to-back games in conference play.
By the way, I know you probably feel the same way. We've said this before. The fact that the OVC tournament is not here anymore, I hate that.
Yeah. It's in Evansville again.
Yep.
That will do it for us. You have a great rest of your wet day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow at 10 a.m. Stay tuned. Jared and the GM. It's next.
Hey, guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.